This transmission is coming to you from an undisclosed location somewhere beneath Portland, Oregon. This is I'll Have a Beer and Talk. It's a weekly show that I do where I have a beer and I talk about a couple stories that are read on the internet that I found interesting while I enjoy that beer that I mentioned. My name is Gary and this is my weird show. Enjoy. Ready to hear about the beer? Well, I'm really thirsty, so ready or not, here it comes. The beer I have randomly chosen this week is Alameda Brewhouse's Papa's Old Ale, a 7.2% ABV Old Ale. Strangely fitting name. According to BeerAdvocate.com, Old Ales are, quote, low attenuated beers with high levels of dextrins, creating a full malt body with plenty of character. They can range in color from dark amber to almost black, and are amusingly described as racy but mellow, which sounds a lot like me. Flavor aspects can be fruity, vinous, malty, and bitterness levels varying wildly between different breweries' takes on the old ale. Stronger versions can even taste similar to port wine. Okay, I think I'm ready for the beer mic. Engage. Well, it smells very subtly of malt, and if I'm not mistaken, actually smells a little bit like red wine. Weird. I shall now take a sip. Racy but mellow is a very fitting description. It's very subtle, a nice deep, dark kind of flavor, some wine notes, and very smooth. Oh, and it's pitch black. Nice. There has been a mystery brewing in the Canadian territory of Nunavut. According to Gizmodo, strange sounds, described as pings, hums, and beeps, have been reported by indigenous hunters throughout the summer in an area about 75 miles northwest of the hamlet of Igloolik in Fury and Helka Strait. The sounds seem to be coming from the seafloor of a polynya, which is an area of open water surrounded by ice where sea mammals congregate. This summer, hardly any of the sea mammals congregated there, which is what prompted people to start investigating and listening. Very mysterious. Several boats that have traveled through the region have reported hearing the sounds as well, coming through their ship's hulls. Theories have ranged from Greenpeace doing dirty tricks to disrupt the hunting of animals in the area, which they deny, to the Baffinland Iron Mines Corporation making sonar surveys of the area, which they deny, to someone conducting some construction, blasting, or hydrography in the area, but Nunavut officials say no permits have been issued for such things. In a statement to CBC News, the Canadian Department of National Defense, also known as the CDND, said it was made aware of the sounds and sent a military surveillance plane to the area, and made this statement of the results. The air crew performed various multi-sensor searches in the area, including an acoustic search for 1.5 hours. The crew did not detect any surface or subsurface contacts. The crew did observe two pods of whales and six walruses in the area of interest. The CDND said that activity from submarines could not be disproven, but is highly unlikely to be the source of the sounds. Maybe it's one of those fish orgies I talked about a few weeks back. Or maybe it's those darn Zygons again. Who knows? Maybe Rush is just working on a new album. This past March, Google's DeepMind artificial intelligence company made history when its AlphaGo AI defeated the world champion Go player Lee Sedol. Go has been considered the most difficult game for a computer to play. It requires intuition and foresight with an ever-changing game field. DeepMind developed a revolutionary system utilizing neural nets and machine learning to allow AlphaGo to achieve victory, and now DeepMind wants to teach an artificial intelligence to play one of the most competitive, professionally played PC games in the world. I am talking about Blizzard Entertainment's classic space-themed real-time strategy game, StarCraft II. StarCraft II, like many other real-time strategy games, colloquially known as RTSs, have the player taking on the role as the commander of various military forces, structures, and resources. The game requires the player to balance resource management, scouting, and battle tactics. In Go, players can see the entire game field at the start. However, in StarCraft, the game starts with players not knowing the layout of the environment until it's been actively scouted, forcing them to make quick adaptations to changing battle conditions, as well as planning out long-term strategies while also engaging in near-constant skirmishes. StarCraft is an interesting testing environment for current AI research because it provides a useful bridge to the messiness of the real world. The skills required for an agent to progress through the environment and play StarCraft well could ultimately transfer to real-world tasks, said DeepMind research scientist Oriel Vinyals. And he knows what he's talking about. He was once the top-ranked StarCraft player in all of Spain. Blizzard and DeepMind have been working together to release a special version of StarCraft II next year, available to any AI researchers that would like to contribute to the project. The new version will have a simplified graphics engine better suited to how machine learning systems process visual information, and Blizzard will also give the AIs replays from StarCraft II matches to gain an initial dataset as to how the game is played. Both Blizzard and DeepMind stress that this is just the start of the research, and an AI system capable of taking on top-ranked human StarCraft players in professional tournaments is still a ways away. Which is good. I don't want to think about machine intelligence-commanded Zerg rushes anytime soon. I've talked about a couple different technologies that could be used to make the odd dream of smart clothing a reality, garments that could track your vitals unobtrusively and efficiently. Currently, the many prototypes of the technology have proven to be a bit too fragile for real-world use. According to Engadget, researchers from the Jacobs School of Engineering have developed a sort of self-healing magnetic ink that can be used to draw or weave circuits that can put up with the day-to-day abuses our human clothing goes through. The team ground up neodymium permanent magnets into microscopic particles, then mix them with conductive ink and, to increase conductivity, some carbon powder. The ink is then hit with a magnetic field, which causes all the little magnetic particles to align together. The ink is then used to print electronic circuits. Because of the aligned magnetic particles, if the lines get torn or cut, the particles attract each other through the power of magnetism, healing the wound, so to speak. The system can repair tears as wide as 3 millimeters, which is, quote, a record in the field of self-healing systems, can self-heal from multiple cuts, heals quickly and autonomously, and isn't affected by hot or humid environments. There is one drawback, however. Whereas the ink can repair cuts and keep electrical signals flowing through the healed area, the ink is no longer bonded, which can cause signal degradation and loss when under high loads. Still, it's nice to know that progress is being made. Hey, maybe that magnetic link can also help keep my socks up. Magnets, how do they work? Paper. It's all around you, but did you know that it's relatively easy to make? You can find out about it by checking out this show's sponsor, Pulp & Deckel, Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio. Pulp & Deckel's mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with mobile workshops, demonstrations, and by creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products. Yes, I did say mobile workshops. We have a truck, and we are working on ideas on how to bring the paper party to you. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out our progress in crafting mobile class options, which could include offering the mobile studio for rent, by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckle.com. If you're in the St. John's area in Portland, you should check out Organic Encounters, the 2015 to 2016 papermaking residency exhibition from Pulp & Deckel, on display at the C3 Initiative at 7326 North Chicago Avenue. It runs from now until November 13th, every Wednesday through Saturday from noon till 6 p.m. Visit c3initiative.org for more information. That is c3initiative.org. If you're like me, and I know I am, when you hear someone mention IKEA, you immediately think of meatballs and inexpensive flat pack furniture. According to Business Insider, IKEA is adding an indoor gardening system to their build-it-yourself offerings. The line, which has been given the name Krita Vaxer, will allow you to assemble a complete hydroponic system to grow your own edible plants in the comfort of your very own home using just water. The system, which seems to only be available in the UK currently, utilizes two parts: a nursery unit where the seedlings can start growing, and a cultivation unit which takes care of mature plants until you eat them. Seeds for 18 different types of edible plants will be available, including standards such as lettuce and chard, and more exciting leafy greens such as chicory and mizuna. These seeds are placed in special water and nutrient-filled plugs, which slot into the nursery unit. Once the plants have matured enough, they are transplanted to the cultivation unit, where you keep them happy by supplying fertilized water until they are ready for harvest. I like this idea and I'd love to try it out. However, judging from how many regular people seem to completely fail at assembling IKEA furniture on their own, I'm a little worried about the average person building a leaky structure in their living room. Just follow the instructions, people. It's not that hard. I wonder if I could grow wheatgrass and catnip for my cat sons. Ooh, maybe I could grow some hops. Just have to wait to see if they bring it to the U.S. Or maybe I could grow spinach that can also detect explosives, because we can do that now, according to The Verge. In a study published in Nature Materials, MIT researchers detailed how they worked in the new field of plant nanobionics, which involves embedding plants with nanomaterials to create the special spinach. The team managed to place sensors on the spinach leaf where photosynthesis takes place. These sensors were designed to detect nitroaromatic compounds, which are chemicals found in landmines and other explosives. The spinach can be planted in an area suspected of containing explosives in the ground, and then the spinach does what plants do when they're planted. It begins absorbing water, nutrients, and ambient chemicals through its roots. After about 10 minutes, any nitroaromatic compounds make it to the spinach leaves, which activate the sensors. These sensors then emit a fluorescent signal, which is picked up by a nearby infrared camera that is connected to a small computer, which then emails that there may be explosives around. It's a strangely complicated system. The researchers say that this root-to-leaf sensor system can work with almost any leafy plant and be used for all sorts of chemical detector needs. One example given is trees alerting humans about an increase in pollutants in the environment. Interesting. And speaking of pollutants, were you aware that livestock burps are one of the largest sources of the greenhouse gases that are altering the global environment? It is true, but according to The Conversation, there may be a simple way to reduce the amount of methane gassy cows eject into the atmosphere. Roughly 11 years ago, Canadian farmer Joe Dorgan noticed that cows he kept in a paddock near the sea were more productive than his other cows. Turns out, the cows were eating storm-tossed seaweed in addition to their regular feed. This led Canadian researchers Rob Kinley and Alan Frieden to study what was going on, and it turns out that the addition of seaweed improved the cow's health and growth, but that wasn't the amazing part. It turns out that ingesting seaweed also reduced the cow's methane production by 20%. This led to Kinley teaming up with the Australian science agency CSIRO, which is an easy way to say the abbreviation of its proper name, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization. Along with CSIRO researchers and marine algae specialists from James Cook University, Kinley analyzed 20 different seaweed species and found that seaweed is capable of reducing methane production in cows anywhere from 0 to 50%, depending on the species, but the cows would have to eat a lot of it to get those results, somewhere on the order of 20% by weight of their feed. The researchers, however, found one species of seaweed, Asparagopsis taxiformis, that could not only reduce methane production by 99% in cows, but could do so in a much smaller dose. Around 2% by weight would need to be consumed. Asparagopsis stops methane in its tracks by containing a compound called bromoform, which reacts with vitamin B12 in the last step of the cow's digestion process. It disrupts the enzymes that gut microbes use to turn waste into methane gas during digestion. So seaweed is the cow version of Beano. Neat. Atlas Obscura has informed me that the U.S. has hired rats to combat wildlife trafficking, so I've decided to share that fact with you for this week's animal story. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, also known as the USFWS, has partially funded a pilot project in Tanzania where the African pouched rat will be used to sniff out shipments of illegal biological products through Tanzania. They have committed $100,000 to this experiment. So, African pouched rats are about 3 feet long and have a sense of smell equivalent to a dog's. They are also quite cute, surprisingly. There's a neat photo in the article of one wearing a little harness and leash being handed a banana to eat. Anyway, illegal wildlife products like pangolin skins and certain hardwoods are constantly being smuggled across borders and are usually well hidden by the smugglers. It's hoped that the rats will be able to locate these items by using their cute little noses. The rats will be trained in a lab to see if they can discriminate between pangolin skin and scales and hardwoods from other substances, then see if they can be trained to somehow indicate to their handlers the presence of the pangolin skins and hardwoods. Then they need to determine the best way to have the rats inspect shipments. If successful, the USFWS said that this pilot project will be, quote, the first phase of a much larger project to mainstream rats as an innovative tool in combating illegal wildlife. Cheekily referring to the $100,000 funding, the USFWS added, in case it is unclear, the rats won't be receiving this money. The project itself will. The rats are generally paid in room, board, and extra bananas. Ha ha ha. You know, the photo of them handing the rat a banana is so insanely cute. I think I'm going to use it for the episode artwork for this week. Rat Patrol in color. Welcome to the fake old west. You know what? This show could not be possible without me, Paul Pendeckel, and you. Yes, your support means the world to me, and makes it actually possible for me to keep making this show every week or so. If you are entertained and informed by I'll Have a Beer and Talk on a weekly basis, and want to help me keep it going, I have a couple options for you. First, my voice is for hire. I can do voiceover work, voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some perfectly adequate audio production. If you feel you have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. You can also tell your friends all about my drunken ramblings and convince them to listen, and you can also help the show by rating and reviewing me on iTunes. Higher ratings on iTunes can increase the show's visibility. This being an audio show, I'm not quite sure how that works, but more eyes means more ears. I want to be in as many people's ears as physically possible. Well, no, wait. I just want people to hear the show. And if you believe what I'm doing here is worth about 20 minutes of your attention each week and want to show your approval by financially supporting each episode, you can become my patron and donate at least $1 a month to the show. If you want to throw some money at me, you can do that at patreon.com/ihaveitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabatradio. All that money goes right back into production costs, which now include beer purchases. Finally made it. And don't worry, I only use that beer for show use. Trust me. Wink. All the Papa's old ale is now in my belly. It's delicious. Well, that means it's time for me to go. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, and random strangers that you may see on the street about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And you should check out ihabitradio.weebly.com for extra content. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckel.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihabitradio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!